cliffcentral.com.
Yes, the MKT show, which you can catch live at 12 o'clock on cliffcentral.com. Bulelo and all the guys usually getting into ridiculous arguments about things, but mostly mocking each other mercilessly, which everybody loves. Everybody likes a little bit of that. Lebang, yeah. And Bulelo are with us this morning, and we've got Yatish joining us for This Is Us just now. We'll get to that at 7:30. We're taking your messages, your thoughts, your interruptions and interjections, and also sometimes the most valuable parts of the conversation. You can do that on YouTube. Just drop us a message there, or you can send us an email. So here's an interesting thing from Keenan. Keenan says, Gareth, I'm one of many South Africans that lost my job due to the pandemic. My dad and myself opened up a small paint and tool supply shop. Can I please leave my details on this platform? Yes, Keenan, with pleasure. Absolutely. Just tell us where you're based. And I'm sure that everybody who, you know, is part of our little community would rather support a small business that's trying to make it than one of these big chains of shops, because, you know, then you can help individuals rather than some big corporation. And you always want to go to someone who you know when it comes to tools and things, someone who actually knows what they're doing. Otherwise, you end up buying the wrong things, and then it costs you double the money. All right. So it's election day yesterday, and today the results are starting to pour in, and there are various news sites that are trying to report the election results as they come in. I saw the Election Center is busy as always and full of media types who are trying to look like they know what's going on. Obviously, at this point, it's much too early for anyone to say what's going on. About 15% of the count is in, which is not surprising because many of the polls only closed last night after 9, with people voting at the last minute. So we'll only find out probably halfway through today what the picture is. And don't believe anyone who says to you, oh, we've got an idea now of what's going on. They don't. Nobody knows right now. And whatever happens in your ward or your municipality or whatever, I just hope you get service delivery. I don't care which party it is. As long as they deliver on the promises that they've made, then good for you. Otherwise, it's back to square one, right? Another 5 years.
Yeah, you know who is delivering is, I don't know if you've heard about this, and this guy called, he termed himself John Wick, by the way, in Mamelodi.
Oh, wow. So, yes.
Oof.
Man, so, is it all happening? So my cousin lives in Uttridgeville, right? Yeah. And she was texting me about just about what's cracking, you know? Because I always give her a hard time. I said, just move to the north. What are you doing? You're doing well, and you're still living
there. Are you kidding? Anyway. If she's in Uttridgeville, she's further north than you.
No, you know I'm that. Saying move not to like this that. North. There is yeah. only yeah. one north.
The but you know what I'm talking about. Again. Don't give people in Pretoria problems.
just move. Please, stop with Pretoria. Just move here. Anyway, all right. Whatever. She stays there. That's fine. So now she's telling me about this guy. And the guys have been kind of telling me about it on the show, and I didn't really listen. But then when my cousin, so I said, okay, I got to look into it because she's just electric herself. This guy has killed 9 people in, so there's apparently these guys called, they call themselves Boko Haram that are basically terrorizing the neighborhood, from what I'm understanding. Yeah. Yeah, and he's killed 9 of them. But interestingly, he uses social media, from what I understand, and he tells the guys basically when he's going to kill them.
That's amazing.
And the community refuses to hand him in. And I know this dynamic because most of my family, 99% of my family, live in that sort of situation, if not worse. So I think the community is protecting this guy. Yeah, so like we got like a little mini Batman Dexter character running around.
Love
so it's wild. 9 people
Love
he's
this.
Killed, eh?
So all of these people, I mean, you know, usually if someone's going around killing people, we call them a serial killer and we are all afraid. But this guy seems only to be going after these really dangerous criminals.
Yeah, and the heads of Boko Haram.
Right. And therefore the neighborhood is like, you know, hugely in favor of him, which is really cool. And this is what happens, I'm afraid. You know, just like a free market, you find the right price for something and people aren't going to pay more than what something's worth in a free market. Similarly, in a market where there is no criminal justice system, or where the police and the courts have given up, or people have given up on them, then this kind of guy comes to the fore. And you may not, I mean, I love the John Wick movies, so you know, the fact that this dude is operating at the level where he's able to take out these bad guys and they can't get him, is just fantastic. But you know what's going to happen.
It's hilarious.
Eventually, something's going to happen. They're going to find him, and then the goddamned criminal justice system is going to get involved, and he's probably going to end up paying. So as much as we all love a little bit of vigilante justice, it usually doesn't end well, unfortunately. But Kanda Kulu says, I hope he starts a franchise soon. You could do with that. Yeah. Yeah. Sipo Mbingo says, slaughter them. It's good for him. Good for him. They support this John Wick.
Yeah. He must be very fed up, hey? Like, I don't know how much time you've spent, like, in Atrejville. Like, being there, like, nothing gets done.
But remember, he's in Mamelodi, like, huh? So the John Wick guy's in Mamelodi. But Atrejville...
Same thing.
Atrejville, actually, in terms of townships in South Africa, is one of the better-run ones. I've also got people I know in Atrejville, and it was always the township that was closest to us when we lived on a farm nearby, and so I knew quite a bit about that. And Atrejville's old, hey, it's probably the oldest township in Pretoria, and there's a little church on the top of the hill, and it's actually not run too badly as far as townships go. And usually townships get, they suck the hind tit in terms of like service delivery and all the rest of it. But if you're going to live in a township in Pretoria, Atrejville's probably your best bet.
It's the better one, but that guy must be tired. Like, that's the epitome of, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to do the shit myself.
Yeah.
And have a little bit of fun.
Well, Dokozo is explaining here what the Boko Haram gang do. They force people to pay rent to run a business in a neighborhood. So, in other words, they're extorting people, basically. And therefore, this guy's like, no, 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 you're not going to get away with that. Anyway, wow. So apparently, here's something from Brandon Pillay. He says, just a message in our neighborhood WhatsApp group. ENCA says there will be a petrol price increase of 1.21 rand at midnight tomorrow. That's quite a big jump, hey? That's a lot more. That's
what's that, $20 a litre, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Where's it going now?
Well, no, it's 1.21 rand a litre extra. So it'll go up.
So it'll be, it's close
somewhere,
to 20
somewhere around 20.
Yeah, it's close to $20, yeah.
Even diesel got the bad end of the stick. It's not going to be pretty.
That is terrible. Yeah, so we're waiting for Keenan to tell us where his hardware store is so that we know where to go and shop. So let us know, Keenan.
Yeah.
All right, and then Mike says, look at that shit shirt of Bulelo's. Wow, Mike does not like your shirt. That's
He's
really
not
good.
Liking it.
All right, a couple other Thanks, things man. That we wanted to get into this morning. First of all, I mean, Lebang and I are both extra scared when Pumi said on Thursday that we have 8 weeks till Christmas. 8 weekends left until Christmas is here. That just... frightened the hell out of me.
It's real.
But
it's real.
Apparently, like, apparently there's a petition to turn Robben Island into like an Ibiza in South Africa.
Please think about this. Please, and I just want this to be planted in the minds of the audience, because if there's one audience that can get shit done, it's this audience. Just think about the endless possibilities. So I think it was like last week sometime where we kind of all realize, well, not all, but as a collective group, we're like, if there's one thing that we're really good at, it's turning up. So let's just keep turning. If it's like South Africans can drink, South Africans can dance, we can groove. I mean, we've got a lot of problems, but we cover it all with our, you know, our abuse of substances and stuff. We know how to groove. If we just say, goodbye, Robben Island, it's been nice, you know, like, let's just get in there and just have the time of our lives. Think about it.
I'm just going to say, because this is going to come up, is it disrespectful to the memory of what Robben Island really was? Because it is a big island. If you haven't been there before, I spent a night on Robben Island once. You've got the prison, you've got the quarry, you've got Robert Sobukwe's house, you've got the governor's house, which is where the boss of the island lived for a very long time, and that's now it's a museum as well. But other than that, there's what used to be a landing strip. I don't think it's serviceable anymore. There are a couple of wild animals running around. Most of the island is fairly barren. It's not a lot that grows on there. If we sold, like, keep the museum part separate, because that's maybe at a push, it's a quarter of the island's size. That leaves us with three quarters to develop as a recreational place. Like, we bring in beach sand from some other part of the country. We put up like a beach on the other side of the island. Is that disrespectful, or is that making use of the space that we're not using? What do you think?
I think the latter. Think resorts, think clubs, think we'll just use what's left of it. I mean, we can leave the museum, whatever, for whoever still really cares that much about all of that stuff. Sure, for y'all, for all the tourists, go for it. But really, when last were you at Robben Island? Like, it's sad. It's like, this is depressing, dog. You get there and you're like, oh, man, I want to get there and be like,
Anthony says, the most depressing Joel ever. Jesus.
Yeah. No, that has to move the whole place.
We need to turn it around. We've got an opportunity here.
So because I asked, so Keenan has just told me where his shop is, the shop that he and his dad started. They're based in shop 625E on Deckers Road in Roodepoort. So if you are in the West Rand, go and support Keenan's hardware store that he started when he lost his job during lockdown. He's in on Deckers Road in Roodepoort, shop 625E. All right, I put it up on the screen now. So if you want to go along, you got to do some DIY at home and support them, especially if you're on the West Rand, because it's near there. Dogoza says, I'm totally in for the pool party island. It would be such a vibe. That island is such a shithole, says Hein. It's not a great place. Let's turn it into something. I agree.
Do we take nothing seriously as South Africans?
No, we don't.
Nothing sacrosanct. But that's why we lose. Come on.
You think we have to take this seriously?
No. Like, these things are important, man. These things are important. You look at every country that's serious. I'm not talking, like, serious countries have places where nobody can go. You don't just walk in here. You go to Sweden. There are places where you don't just walk in because you voted.
Well, you sound like Neil. Neil says, terrible idea. Please don't come and spoil Cape Town.
South Africans, not everything is a turn up, guys.
Dude, but
you know what? We are teenagers. Like, I've realized something about South Africans as a country. We are like just delinquent teenagers. So yeah, maybe let's just
think about it, guys. Like, Neil, I mean, you sound like, you know, those people that live in these places where they've put beaches in there, and now they're charging like $300 to spend an hour in that beach. Dude, come on, let's think ahead. Like, it's time.
We could even pay like influencers to go there and like get the thing started up, you know. Like, we could
do a fire festival.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But now, like, what advert is it when, hey guys, I'm just here, some guy, okay, I don't know his name, but okay, he was here 27 years, whatever, he's sounds quite a cool story. Anyway, so I've got my new pumps, and these are unbelievable. If you want to go to an old island, okay, love you, my lovies, hit subscribe.
Yeah, that's like, what you end up with. That's exactly what you're getting.
We do.
Someone says, a golf course. I don't know about that, because there's very little water. You want palm trees.
Like a putt-putt course.
No, you want palm trees, you want beach sand, and you want, like, more boats going back and forward to ferry the people across. I think that's what we need.
Mm.
You can't...
I think if you want...
Maybe you don't get the option of staying on the island. So, like, let's say even after lockdown ends, there's a curfew, party ends at, like, 11 o'clock. And so you can start, you can go in 11 in the morning, but you have to be out by 11 at night. No one gets to stay.
If you're on the golf course, that's what, like, fan courts and the likes are for.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, really beautiful, great. That's not, no. What we need to do with Robben Island is fight.
Dude 69 says, have those rage parties there. If you want to leave when you're high, you can swim back to the mainland. Food for sharks. Bulelo, we already have a place where nobody can just go. It's called Boksburg. That's a good point. Oh. Boksburg's getting some serious hits today, hey? Wow. Yes, but their ferry charge is 300 Rand on its own just to get there. Yes, but also that keeps the trash out. So I think you've got to have a price.
That's for foreigners. It's definitely for foreigners.
You think?
I very rarely hear South Africans on that island, yeah. I've been a couple of times. It's mostly foreigners that do it.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of people are just saying, just get Ja Rule involved. That's all you need and it'll work, obviously.
You know?
And then what we do is we use that money to keep up the museum. So for those serious tourists who are coming to see Robben Island, the historical monument. We won't touch any of the parts of the island that are of historical value. You know I'm a massive fan of history, so I wouldn't want that to happen. But the whole other side, the side that faces out into the ocean, that side nobody's on. I'm telling you, we could do something with that. Plant some palm trees, put some lawn down, put some beach sand down, a couple of gazebos. You know, you have those beds with the curtains on them that people sit on, and you know you can serve cocktails and have like a whole vibe.
A vibe.
Yeah, like
really
an island.
What South Africa is. South Africa is no longer this like.
And you could have. You can have these rich white people from the cities, and you can have these BEE black diamonds, and they can all like stand there and show off to each other. You have parties, and you have festivals, and then you have competitions for like who looks the best and who's got the best outfits. And I'm telling you, this is a way to make serious money. If you want to turn Robben Island into something that is totally financially sustainable, this is the way to do it.
Mm.
That's a really good idea.
Just get these piano artists involved, and it can work. I mean, look what Black Coffee is doing in Ibiza.
Right.
Like, if there's anyone who knows how this is working, it's Black Coffee. Like,
let him
just come back and...
Give him a share. give him a share. I mean, Gabriel Krauser says, the Apartheid Museum is right next to Gold Reef City Theme Park, and that works. That's a good point.
Enough.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's a very good point. Sean is taking it one step further. He says strip club and casino. Look, I don't know. You reckon
that's
okay,
Lebab?
You're okay with that?
On the money. Guys, if this is about bringing money back into the country, this is exactly how we do it. I'm telling you. Start off in the afternoon, you know, you go to the museum. Oh, 46664. Oh, man, this is so sad. Fuck this. Let's go turn up. It's a perfect day.
Oh, wow. All right. Kutso says, maybe one of those parties should have a survivor theme where you get voted off the island if you're a party pooper.
Okay.
Yeah. Guys, according to Michelle, Robben Island is a marine protected area. We, as the aquarium, now Michelle works at the aquarium, are the only people that are allowed to dive there with a permit. So no to opening it. Ah, Michelle, for a couple of seals?
Yeah, screw the turtles, you're saying. The thing about South Africans, we've never known how to use a dustbin. Oh,
no, we don't.
Now the turtles are choking because, Azisha, No, wait a minute, fella. So stay in Boksburg, rather. You can litter in Boksburg, not on the ocean.
Well, we know that's never going to happen. But
sorry, Michelle.
To pretend it will anyway.
Hey, we're allowed to dream.
Right?
Yes.
Let's just dream.
Yes, you are.
All right.
You are allowed to dream.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Cape when the southeaster blows, says Helen? That place will blow away. Yeah, that's also true. They've got bad wind out there. So, but then, you know what? It's not open every day. It's open on days where there isn't wind. Sorry. You booked for Friday. This Friday is too much wind. You'll have to come next Friday. It's in the ticket.
You've turned me.
Terms and conditions.
Problem solved.
You've turned me. Now, what happens? Fighting with my girlfriend. Neil, who's that dumb bitch on your phone? I told you. Now, boom, boom, boom. Because now the consequences are she pushes Neil into the sea. Oh, my God, yeah. Great white, Neil's gone. Mm-hmm. So you also got to think about these parts. What do we do now? And as South Africa, do we want to be building up more walls in a place that already built up social walls and now it gets ugly and now, you see, what do you do? Or just let Neil be eaten by a shark is what you're saying.
That is such a great idea. Michael says, you call the nightclub Seals. Club Seals. I'm sure Michelle's going to love that one. That's great.
I feel like that's where Charul comes in. Mm. Charul has got this unlock, guys.
Yo. Come with all those episodes. A club called Seals.
Imagine that.
So I saw a joke last week that said if they turn like Mandela's actual cell into like a nice little VIP section where you can roll
weed. This is where I draw the line.
Roli Sasa.
They'll
call it Roli Sasa. And if you know what that means, like Roli Sasa. Oh. I'm here for all of this. I'm loving this right now.
Please, this is not good. Now you're starting to lose me.
Man.
So Bulelo is, and you're looking at going to America sometime soon, right?
Yeah. Very soon.
Bulelo's going to be traveling before any of the rest of us. I mean, he was already traveling to and from the rest of the country long before all of us. But you mentioned that you were talking to the guys about their passports. And they don't keep their own passports. They actually have them in a safe with the rest of the family's passports, which is very odd. I keep my own passport. I know where it is.
No, but you're a grown man. But
yeah, you're not. Adult.
Both of them separately. And I mean, they both are, what, 25 and 26 or okay. 23 and 26. And it seems like it's a thing because they were so natural with, oh, no, my passport's with my family in a safe. The one guy's family lives in Jay Bay and he lives in Johannesburg. So that's about 1,200 kilometers. Why does your mom still have your ID or yeah. have your passport is what I was asking.
I think
but is this a normal thing that families, like do adults keep the family passports? Because in my home...
I think that's embarrassing.
Were they coddled?
I think
were they coddled?
That's very no, embarrassing. You need to be in charge of your own documents, for God's sake. Really?
No, from 18, eh? Surely, from 18, just keep your passport. Why do your parents keep your passport?
And, you know, you'll be surprised. It's probably more common than we think, eh?
No, it must be, because when I asked both of them separately, completely, oh, no, my passport's in a family safe. What the hell are you talking about? I thought. But maybe I'm the weird one, and I can't, listen, my
I don't
father
even
independent.
Know, like,
from
who
from
has,
13, my dad. Keep
but who has a family safe? What's that all about? What else is in there?
Well, you know, I thought you guys would help me out.
You know, you sometimes see people on the news, and because we now see the inside of their houses, we see like a picture in the background or whatever. I always like fantasize, what if that, you know, like some university lecturer, and behind that picture they've got like a safe. And what would they store in there? Because you know what university lecturers are like. You probably keep a whole lot of shit that nobody else wants. What kind of stuff, if you had... a safe. Now, what would you put in it? Maybe money, if you had cash money lying around. Maybe your passport, your...
certificate.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But, what other shit would you put in there? Like, what would your treasure be? What would you put in your treasure trove, your your safe, if you had one?
I don't have any nice stuff. It's such a good question. Like, I don't have anything, like, really nice like that.
Does it need to be like nice stuff? Like, this is like opportunity for like what Leanne was doing last week, Friday, where it's like, this is your personal stuff.
Her sex box. Maybe it's just stuff you want to keep away from the kids. Maybe it's also just stuff that you think is valuable, but nobody else cares about, like sentimental bullshit that you want to put in the safe.
I'm not sentimental.
Now, I know this is a pointless exercise for you, but so here we go. Temba says, the important family documents are kept by the matriarch under the mattress. That's
okay.
Robin says, guns only in that safe. Your cryptocurrency wallet addresses and external wallets, says Michael. Yeah, that's a good point. That's for those of us who have those. Or just have a drawer with the lock on.
I know my mom like kept all of like the documents from like all of her siblings and all of her mom's RDP, blah, blah, blah. All the ancient government stuff that was like proof of, you know, she has all of that, like all of it. And there's tons, just papers and papers and papers of things like funeral trusts and blah, blah, blahs. And in 1967, this person did that. Everybody's death certificates, like it's a lot going on.
Okay.
And it's not in a safe. It's just sort of lingering somewhere in her cupboard.
Yeah. It's probably filed somewhere. I mean, like a lot of people keep that stuff filed somewhere. Well, filed means disorganized in some drawer. But I do wonder when we see these Zoom calls, and you might have been in a few meetings lately where you see the background in someone's house and you're like, if that person had anything valuable, what would they store in the safe? What would be you know, what would be in their safe? Heinz says my watch collection, some knives. Listen to this. Hang on. My watch collection, some knives, Krugerrands, and documents. Ooh,
whoa.
Bonas.
Okay.
Bonas.
Well, hey, what are putting a gun in a safe? Like, if I need it, well, what do I need to be pushing? 8632. Hey, Janine, what's the code again? Why do people keep guns in a safe? It makes no sense to me.
Kids, dude.
I don't know. Cabela says, my mattress is the ultimate safe to black people.
Clean.
No, that is no lie. If you didn't grow up in a black family, Everything lives under a mattress.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything that matters everything. Is under your...
Sometimes it's the whole salary. The whole salary gets withdrawn on the day it comes in and it goes immediately under the mattress. I love to see it. It's beautiful.
Oh, man. I suppose a lot of people would put their drugs in the safe, right? If they had drugs.
Yeah.
That's what you'd put in there.
That's a good point. That's a good point, yeah.
I'd be interested to know. First time driving to the office since lockdown, and I'm dying, says Lyndon Dooley. So that's. I'm sorry for you that you have to go to the office for the first time. I think we've pretty
Wait
much...
a minute.
We've been going...
Sorry.
The first time since lockdown started.
We're 11 months into this year. Lockdown happened... Like 6 months in. That's 17 months.
Say it. I know what you want to say.
No, come on, nah.
You know what also.
17 months.
So, you know what's also going to become valuable, and Yatish just brought it up now, is like what you would keep in your safe. You say your vaccine certificate, right? Because we're going to need that. That's going to become like a valuable travel document. Forget about your passport. That's going to be more important.
No, but you can make it digital now, by the way.
Yeah,
so, that's out.
Yeah,
you can go and register and make it digital. So, don't worry about a safe.
Yeah, but you got to keep it on. I think it's passports, vaccine certificates, probably as important these days.
Absolutely.
So, Yatish, did your parents keep your passport? Is it a thing, like when you were younger? In a safe?
Yeah, they did. They did.
You see, it's a thing.
My mom's got my passport. She keep everything. That's how it used to work.
But to what age? Like, to what? When did you take ownership of your life and say it's cool? I got it.
I didn't. She moved it from herself to my wife. So I was completely cut out.
But you've never been... You've never had to worry. It's not your responsibility. Someone else is always going to have your passport.
Clearly.
Okay.
Correct.
Awesome.
All right. Just quickly, for Lindy Dooley, who's going to the office for the first time and who most of us can't believe she's going for the first time since lockdown started, Cabello says, no, take the nearest U-turn and go back. That's good. That's exactly right.
Don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, it is time for This Is Us, which is a regular Tuesday getting together that we have, and we talk a little bit philosophically some of the time, a little bit more practically some of the rest of the time. And this morning we want to just have a conversation, which I think many of us are thinking about anyway. First, Yatish, did you vote yesterday, and where did you go, and how was it?
I did vote. I went to the Killarney voting station near my spot, and it was quiet. Hey, mine was incredibly quiet. I think we just walked in, did the thing, and left. It probably took 2 minutes to 5 minutes. I can't even remember.
Lucky you. You didn't need to take camping chairs and a thermos flask and a blanket.
And a cooler box.
No, but we were lost, right? We were lost because cues help you know what to do. You can look at the person in front of you and go, okay, what do they do? It was a bit like going to McDonald's at lunchtime at the drive-thru and there's no cars in the line. Like, what do you do with yourself? Do you drive up to the speaker? Like, what do I do next? So it was very quiet. And I think you guys were talking about it earlier as well, the lowest turnout ever, apparently. We'll wait to see today.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, because I think that's also us, you know, South Africa. We have to look out at ourselves in the mirror and figure out what we do right, what we do wrong, and what the real definition of South Africans is turning out to be. But today, another edition of This Is Us. Now, every Tuesday at 7:30, we are joined by Yatish Nasi, Lebang Khosana, to unpack what we can all do to spread positivity, kindness, and good vibes here in South Africa. With the regional elections that happened yesterday, it was quite evident that most people are just not voting. And the real question is why? And the simple answer is that there's no faith in government. And the other question is, what happens next? And that's where This Is Us comes in. It's about to get real on the show this morning. We'd like to hear from you. You can join us if you would like. All you have to do is send us a message live on YouTube, or you can email us during the course of the show. We're always checking that stuff. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what's been going on. And by the way, I just want to find out, Yatish, we almost went into the territory of sacrilege just now, because Lebang was saying, you know, Robben Island, there's this petition going around to turn it into an Ibiza and like a party island. And I said, look, as someone who loves history and who cares about history and who studied history, as long as you don't mess with the museum part of the island, the quarry, Robert Sobukwe House, the prison, and then the governor's house, because those are all parts of the museum, then it's fine. Then the other side of the island, which is mostly terrible anyway, you could turn into something. And maybe it can even fund the museum and the historical part of the island. But South Africans are pretty good at a party. And I think a lot of people took yesterday. I know just in my family, I had stern words with at least two people in my family because they just considered it another day to sit around in the sun, you know, have a few people over, entertain the kids. It was a holiday, basically. And they woke up at the last minute and went to go and vote. Luckily, they got in just in time. But South Africans, and we're good at parties. We're not so good at being responsible. And then we wonder why our politicians are the same.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so torn on that issue as well. I remember a few years back, I was in Rwanda, Kigali. If anybody's ever been there, like it's such a mad city. Like, you know, we flew in at night, and I remember thinking like, wow, the everything looks really well manicured, really like well kept. Let's see what it looks like when the sun hits. And the next morning, yeah, you know, it felt the same. It's stunning. For anybody who goes out there, you want to see people delivering, go check them out. But I remember one of the people we were with, we drove over a bridge, and she sort of said to us, you know, this is the bridge where I forget the name of the river, but this is where like most of the bodies were dumped, blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, it was a completely innocuous bridge. Right. And we asked her, we were like, so where's the sort of memorials, or where are the big historical call-outs? This is obviously quite a significant place. And she said to us, look, you know, if we really make a big deal of remembering something that bad, the reality is we just won't move on. She said probably most of the coworkers I work with have either murdered a member of my family or been involved in something.
Oh, wow.
And so how could we ever look past it if all we did was remember it? So we made a decision to just move on, which I thought was like mind-blowing, you know. And maybe we move on with an Ibiza Island and Robben Island, I'm not sure. But, you know, there's a powerful lesson in that, right? There really was.
That's incredible. So just because it's so complicated and it was all like people that he works with, people that everybody knows, everybody's been forced to get along. And this is much more recent than our 1994 stuff, you know. In some ways, this is a genocide on a level that we certainly experienced a lot of hardship, especially in the 70s and 80s. But this was in the 90s. And these guys are just...
Yeah, nothing like that.
They just moved them. And yeah, nothing like that where there was like one tribe killing anyone just because they were from another tribe. I mean, we've definitely had our issues, but I don't think we got to genocide levels, even in the most horrible possible interpretation of our history. So these guys are just focused on the future. They're not looking back, huh?
No, they just moved on. And you can see it, right? It's evident if you ever visit the city. Absolutely is evident. They've just, like you say, they've just moved on. And I think there's, you know, and so I've watched a lot in the last 24 hours, I guess, and you know, some of the narrative that the youth are just apathetic and people don't care anymore. I don't think it's right. I think people care. I don't think they think they can make a difference voting. And who can argue? And my favorite is, I mean, I'm no political analyst, but I can talk to the marketing and the communications, right? And if you just read some of these posters, I'm like, where have you been for the last 10 years? Yeah. Like, how do you put up posters that say, we build communities? Okay, I don't know if you should be out to market saying those things. Or, you know, my favorite always is when political parties talk about victory, right? And it's like, you know, if we come together, we can win. Win what? Like, what do we win after yesterday? Like, you win a seat, you win XYZ. But I feel like if I look at the messaging and I look at the communication for the local government elections, it just feels like, and I know you guys have had conversations with mixed results about that, right? It's have people really been dealing the issues? Have they really been talking about you know, what it is you should be voting for. And that's where, you know, to circle it back, I think that's why we thought there was a space for something like This Is Us, because there actually needs to be a platform outside politics for people to take action.
I just want to pause before we even go back to the elections. You brought up Rwanda, and I'm just this is really quite a stunning thing for me to learn about the place, because I haven't been there and I don't know much about how they've dealt with it since. You know, I understand the history and the Tutsis and the Hutu, and I understand how the Catholic Church played a large role in that, and how religion was also part of the problem there in many ways and shapes and forms. But there's always going to be, in various parts of the world, a huge amount of tension between, you know, two warring factions, whatever they may be. But what's interesting here in Rwanda is their decision to just move on. And I wonder sometimes what the balance is. Again, as someone who cares the most about history, we spend a lot of time in South Africa talking about our most recent history, post-1994, you know, what's happened in the country, what democracy has meant to us. And in some ways, we kind of look on our history with this idea that there's something magical and spiritual going on. Certainly when we look at people like Nelson Mandela, and despite the fact that his reputation has taken a knock with some younger elements and people who don't particularly care for history, we do tend to look on all of that with these rose-tinted glasses, and we think we're really special. We think we're the only country in the world that's ever got anything right. And I wonder if we aren't focused a little, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I'm a person who loves history, but I wonder if we aren't focused too much on the past and not enough on the future. Because if we were focused more on the future and less on complaining about the past, whether we're white, black, colored, Indian, whatever the case may be, the fact is, like, if you're not more focused on tomorrow than you are on yesterday, then you are stuck there and you're not going to get better. And the country's not going to get better. And if you don't vote, if you didn't go yesterday because you don't care, not because you have a principal objection to it, because there are people who have very good arguments for why they don't vote. And I'm not going to argue with those people today. But if you just didn't go because you don't care, and we know that youth apathy is probably one of the biggest problems that we have in South Africa. It's not the old people. The old people go and vote. And a lot of us think that that's wrong because these old people vote along racial lines or along language lines or along old alliances or whatever. The fact is, we're not, as young people, going to vote. And I don't even know if I can call myself young people anymore. I wonder how much of that is informed by an attachment to the past rather than an investment in the future. What do you guys think? What do you think, Lebang?
Isn't this exactly what we spoke with Muzi about when I said, you know, my worry is how do I get my gran and my mom and her age mates to stop, you know, continuously voting in the same way? And he was like, dude, forget about those people. Leave them alone. Focus on the youth. And he literally said word for word, go to their funerals and bury them. And then after that, I was like, okay, cool. He maybe have a point. But then you shift the magnifying glass and you look at the youth, and the youth is literally almost seeming so detached from their reality. And it goes back to the story that we're spending so much time really living in the past and focusing and highlighting the past. And I guess on one aspect is, sure, we need to know how we got here, but no, now we just need to look at what are we going to do differently tomorrow. And I guess what This Is Us, we're at a point where it's like, let us be so intentional about just focusing on tomorrow and really just sharing those good stories that can make tomorrow better, so that we stop really living in a place where, oh, we got here, we're so sad. Oh, man, all this bad stuff. Oh, well. And again, I say this quite so intensively, like, these kids don't really care that much, dog. I promise you, Gareth, they have such a big disconnect with our history. They do not, they don't care. They don't, they are so far away from it. And, you know, how can we now
I think you can prove that fairly quickly. I mean, you just have to ask people, like, who was O.R. Tambo, for example? Is this airport in Johannesburg named after him? Or you ask people, who was Chris Hani, even? Because outside of the Hani family, I wonder how many people are keeping that memory alive. You know, this is not that long ago. How many people in South Africa have even been, forget about Robben Island for a second, but if you live in Johannesburg and you haven't been to the Apartheid Museum, let me tell you something. You go there, you're like, whoa, I forgot that even happened. Even if you were a student of history like I am. So I think you make a good point. Like, there's a very fine balance between knowing your history and appreciating where you come from, understanding the context and moving forward and changing tomorrow.
Yeah, sort of.
I mean, the other thing, I read a thing, I'll never pronounce his name right, but it's that the Greek basketball player, Giannis, whatever, whatever it is. And they won this year. It's not like I follow it keenly, but I read a thing he spoke about, which I thought was really, really cool. He said, you know, he doesn't focus on the past because he says that's where your ego lives. He doesn't focus on the future because that's where your pride lives. But all he does is focus on today because it keeps him humble. And that's, you know, wow. So I thought, you know, what was so interesting about that thought is even the future, I think, for a lot of the youth, Lebang, is probably too far away. It's like, you know, what really worries me is the here and now. And I think maybe yesterday demonstrated that, right? I think yesterday demonstrated that. I mean, there were, I don't know, you guys spoke about it earlier as well. There were reports of some service delivery protests still. I saw in KZN there were some roads being blocked. There were lots of protests yesterday. I think yesterday, in a way, even the poor voter turnout, I'd argue, was a silent form of protest. It was people going, we're actually not happy with today, to your point, Gareth. The past doesn't actually matter, and I think a lot of political parties trade on the past, particularly the incumbents, obviously, and go, here's our legacy, here's what we've done. But again, I take the lesson from a country like Rwanda that says, actually, it doesn't matter. We have what we have. What do we do now? And that's, for me, that was the take out of that visit.
Yeah. I'm seeing a comment, and I love this. It's from HW. Gareth, can you pull it up? It says, currently finishing my matric, and it is shocking to talk to fellow matriculants on politics. 2 out of 10 were activists, but out of my class, 7 out of 50 actually voted. This is a matriculant. So it's quite evident that this gap is bigger and bigger.
Okay, so there's this thing that they do, and here's, now we get into some controversial territory. I want to know what Lebang and Yatish think of it.
Yes, we can't hear you. Jesus.
Sorry, I got you. I was being stupid. So here's a controversial thing to bring up. You know, if an immigrant wants to migrate into a country in the first world, so to speak, they sometimes do what is called a civics test. Now, I wonder if there isn't merit in us in South Africa either teaching civics at school, which is something Muzi also brought up the other day, or whether it isn't a part of what voting is meant to be. In other words, you have to go online quickly. You have to do a quick 10-question test. And it's questions like, for example, you know, South Africa has a bicameral parliament. What does the upper house do? Now, a lot of people are not going to know that. But we've got the National Council of Provinces, and they actually are a rubber stamp. They ratify some legislation. They also introduce legislation. But most people don't know that. And these are elected representatives. Ask people things like, for example, what is the minimum voting age in South Africa? Name 6 of our 11 official languages. What are the 9 provinces called? These are basic things that you should know. Which city is the capital for the executive? Which one is the capital for the judiciary? Which one is the capital for the legislature? I don't think a lot of people know this stuff. Now, I don't want to make a distinction between people who are exposed through a good education system to civics or people who are not. But I do believe if you're going to take voting seriously, you need to know what you're actually voting for. So we don't need to go into ideology or political parties, but the system that was set up by our constitution, which is actually quite interesting. If people spent 10 minutes just learning that, doing a little quiz online, making sure that they get upwards of 5 out of 10 of those questions right, and then it says to you, you know, you really are ready to go and vote, or you get less than 5 out of 10 and it says to you, listen, you need to do some homework. You don't seem like the kind of person who's going to vote responsibly or necessarily knows that much about how the country works. Maybe do a bit more research before you go and vote, because I think it might just give some people a kick up the ass that they need. If we're going to test migrants into countries on civics, maybe we should have civics as a serious subject in South Africa.
Yeah, you know, Germany, I saw a thing, Germany and Italy, I think it is, or France, or one of the other European countries, actually teach a form of political strategy in schools. So what they talk about is you shouldn't be voting for who you just support, because I think that's probably the sort of challenge we have here. And Muzi spoke about it last week. We need new heroes, right? So they challenge pupils on going, it's not just about who you support, but how you vote is you've got to understand the structures of government, to your point, the way they work, and how your vote, if it's not just about who you like or dislike, but how your vote contributes to the molding of that structure, because that's ultimately what's important. And again, to your point, you know, people take driver's tests, they take all sorts of, you know, we have accreditation for all kinds of things. Arguably one of the most important decisions you make, which is who runs the country, we all approach blind. You just sort of go in and
there was that funny video which I actually put up on my Instagram of that very drunk guy who went to vote. I'm sure you guys saw it, right? That dude who was he was falling all over the place. He pulled down the voting booth with him. He was a disaster. Now
feels clustered.
We've got to be really careful, because the people who make the rules might make rules that prejudice the three of us or any of our listeners or perfectly reasonable people. But, I mean, that guy gets the same vote you do, that drunk guy. And this is the inherent hypocrisy inside democracy, is that everyone is equal, which I think we all accept. That was part of the reason we rebuilt this country after 1994 in an image that we preferred to the very backward, centralized kind of national socialist state that we were before. And democracy has pluses and it has minuses. And I had this debate with someone just yesterday, and she and I were both saying, is it really worth going to vote? Now, it turns out we both did. But a lot of people ask themselves that question. And maybe they ask that question because they look at that drunk guy and they go, what's the point? You know, that guy's got the same vote as me, and he doesn't know whether he's a teapot or a hockey stick. So why am I doing this? What do you think of that as an argument?
I mean, at the end of the day, we all have a right to vote. This is the bottom line. I think it's a bit one-sided and a bit skewed to look at it in that way. That guy went to vote, man. You got a car. You got, you know, access to voting polls right next to your house, and you still didn't, and that guy did. That's kind of just telling of that we're all really living in the same country, and we're all responsible for what comes of it or what we make of it and how we want to live in it. And again, that's where things like the scissors come in. So a lot of these conversations aren't had, Gareth. People aren't ready to discuss this. You've just educated us in ways that we can make this simpler and make this more understandable. Let's have these tests. Think about it. So I think what we're trying to do now is really, really hone in on that, really do this. And 30 minutes that we do every Tuesday is just not enough. It's not enough. You know, there's so much that we want to unpack. There's so much we want to talk about. There's so many different avenues and angles. This is such a layered thing that I think it's good for us to now take it a step further, which is where we're going with this.
Well, I mean, here's to that point. Michael says, Gareth, I'm an immigrant to South Africa. I must confess I have no idea of the details you just mentioned. Won't you do a video on this with graphics and explanations in your own words? Maybe this is something that we can start doing as This Is Us, is educate people about the system that we live in. Because, you know, you've got a lot of people out there, activists. Mm. I say that with inverted commas. HW just said activists a moment ago. A lot of people out there who call themselves activists, but they don't actually know any of this either. And they're only activists because it sounds cool. They don't know the system. Yeah. They want to tear down the system. They have a problem with the system, but they don't even know what the system is. If you ask them, how does it work? How does South Africa actually work? How does the country function? How is it meant to function? What are the structures that were put in place by this constitution of ours, which people all over the world think is one of the best constitutions there are? Do you actually know how it works? And if you don't know how it works, you're not an activist, because you're not even sure what you're fighting. Maybe that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just take constitutional, like, just take understanding the constitution. I mean, I would argue, you know, I obviously went to quite a privileged school, and even there, don't think we really spent the time to understand the basics of the Constitution. It's something you have to do on your own. And, you know, even I just think last week where you know, Imamuzi saying, I've tried to make my book really simple and try to make it really easy for people to understand. And even then, people are saying to me, I can't read or I can't whatever. So, you know, just access to the Constitution, I think, is a challenge. Access to how things work is a challenge. Access to understanding these structures is a challenge. And when you get there, then yes, then the drunk person has the same votes as you do, because the level of understanding is just not, is just not equitable.
Well, I mean, in Australia, it's compulsory to vote. You know that. So if you don't vote in Australia, you actually get fined. And Sean is saying we should have a system in this country where if you don't vote, you get $1,000 fine. I don't know that that'll help. First of all, who's gonna actually police that? Our police can't police the stuff that police are there for. So this is another stupid thing that we don't want our police having to do. Can you imagine going door to door like, please show me your voting record, and then they look at your recce votes, and then they see that you didn't vote in this municipal election. They're like, $1,000 fine. You know what's gonna happen, right?
No.
That's not
gonna happen.
So I don't think you can force people to vote, and I don't know that that's how democracy is meant to work. It's meant to be voluntary.
Mm.
It's not meant to be mandatory. Mm. And
it's pretty bad. Like there was a policeman yesterday that went to vote, but he left his ID at home. But he was in his uniform, so he was telling them, but look, I'm in my uniform, I'm a cop, just let me vote. And they're like, dude, if I came there and I wanted to certify my ID, would you let me? So we're a long way away.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a long way away when it comes to like that kind of mess. So we've got a long way to go, but we have to be hopeful. And I think in as much as it was, you know, a bit of a tough day in essence, there is still that hope, guys. I won't lie to you. I feel it. Like, people are feeling the weight and the heaviness of it all. But at the end of that weight and heaviness, they say, but we'll see. Not people aren't giving up in the way that the 10% are. People aren't throwing in the towel. There are really people that are doing the groundwork, and they are killing it.
They are
doing it so beautifully.
We are endlessly hopeful in this country, right? I mean, we will find hope at the bottom of the deepest, darkest place in the sea. But I kind of like that about South Africa. But I do want to go back to this comment that HW made earlier about how these numbers stack up. Just look at this again, because it's really worth reflecting. You talk about this is us. So now let's look in the mirror. He says, 2 out of 10 of the people in his matric class are activists, but only 7 out of 50 voted yesterday. So what is that about? Like, what is that apathy? Where do these people – are these people all going to – emigrate to some other place? Is that the solution? Because I hear lots of people talking about emigration as their big solution to things, and I don't believe that's right at all. I think a lot of people have made very good and a lot of people have made very bad decisions when it comes to moving themselves somewhere else on the globe. And it doesn't always solve all your problems. Sometimes the problems that you had here in South Africa will continue to haunt you in other places. So don't believe for a second that you're going to solve all your problems just by moving your physical body and your possessions to a separate place. That's not the solution. You've got to play a part in trying to fix things. And if you're not even going to get up, if you're so lazy, because that's really what a lot of this is. A lot of these people don't have a principled argument against democracy. They're just lazy. If you're too lazy to even vote, you're probably too lazy to get a job. You're probably too lazy to learn anything about the people around you. You're probably too lazy to make a contribution. What's wrong with us if this is us?
Let me try to find hope at the bottom of the
deepest, darkest chasm.
Yeah. deepest, darkest chasm. I mean, maybe in some ways that statistic has some encouragement, right? And the encouragement is, you know, like 20% there are basically wanting to play a role, but only, you know, what, 14% are saying, I think that role is through voting. So, you know, the way I would take that is to say, you know, people are looking for an alternative for active citizenry, right? People are looking for an alternative to play a role. They don't believe that voting is a legitimate way to make a difference. I mean, you could take that angle, in which case, you know, part of the reason why we want to have conversations like this is us is to say, You know, and I think Janisha mentioned it in her piece that the trust levels are like at 14% between institutions and South Africans. So we don't really trust institutions, government, politicians, etc. But there is still a bit of hope between each other, right? And so if we look at some of the people Labang's looking at, if we basically go, and that's also what This Is Us is. Basically, guys, this is us. There's no one else.
Well,
like we're on our own in some ways. You know, yeah. We've got to do something.
My last word is just, I was standing in the queue yesterday for almost two and a half hours, and I saw people smiling, I saw people laughing, I saw people in good humor. I didn't see a bunch of angry people who weren't talking to each other. There was one dude wearing an ANC face mask who was standing like three people behind me. He was chatting comfortably to an old white lady. Everybody was happy, and we do believe in each other. We do love and trust each other in this country, believe it or not. That's what I see every day. I don't see people being mean. I don't see people being racist. I don't see people being possessive and selfish and cruel to each other and saying horrible things and looking with grimaces. I see people who are genuinely like trying to get along. And we've been let down by the people we voted for. And we've been let down by the institutions, as Yatish says. But I think a lot of the work is in us. And if you're going to criticize everything, at least know what you're criticizing. And for me, if anything's come out of this morning, it is that we need to pay more attention to how the systems that we've already got work. Because we don't even know how those are working. Before you give up on voting, before you give up on the structures that were very carefully put into place to try and make this place work, what is it, 27 years ago, before you criticize and try to dismantle that, try to figure out how it actually works. Because if you don't, I can't take you seriously. And you're not suggesting an alternative. You're just complaining like the Karens.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
All right. That's all we got time for. I didn't want to have the last word. Don't you two want to close it off?
Look, I like when you have the last word. It literally rounds off what we're trying to do here. But real talk, we all agree. But on the real, you know, when you're inside the streets and you're having these conversations, guys, it's real. It's real. It's actually our reality. And I am so keen for us to just really start closing that gap and just shedding the light on the good, because you see how much negativity gets all the spotlight. It's like that's where it's at.
Yeah.
So if we can just focus on doing the opposite, then I think we're doing something. It's not just sitting here talking, having these fun conversations and then like giving each other high fives at the end of the morning. No, at the end of this, you're going to feel something. You're going to be moved and say, fuck, actually, yeah, what am I doing? So let's get it.
Let's do that. All right, go and get it. Get it, everybody. Have a happy post-election day today. The results will start pouring in later. We'll see whether we've chosen wisely or stupidly. And that obviously is also a matter of opinion. But otherwise, have an excellent day. Yatish and Lebang will return on your show, Lebang, Life with Lebang, which is happening on Thursday. And make sure you don't miss that. All right, very good.
Awesome.
Have a happy day, people.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com